Welcome to the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Quizmaster Lee Brushknight. I'm joined here, as usual, by the one, the only, Mr. Mark Davis.
Hello, Lee. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
We're not only joined by each other today.
No.
But we're joined by the host of a very special podcast. This is Mike Kniry of the Three Songs Story Podcast by WGCU. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hi, thank you. We're very special.
I think so. Yeah. Congratulations.
We're feeling pretty good about it.
You had a recent one-year anniversary, right?
Yeah, we just celebrated our year anniversary, like, I don't know, almost 2 months ago now, really. So we're on episode 60, I think.
That's awesome. Yeah, we're inside our first year.
Yep.
A little bit. We'll be coming up on it. But yeah, you've had several awesome guests throughout your history.
Yeah, yeah.
Some notable trivia guests, I would say, such as the individual who etched 58,000 names on the Vietnam Memorial Wall.
Yeah. Lucas Century. He lives out on Sanibel Island, and he's the guy that did the Vietnam Wall. I kind of know him through the world and bumped into him, and he came in, and his was awesome.
That's awesome. That's not a thing that you would expect to have, like, a Southwest Florida connection But, yeah, so there's tons of cool facts and stories buried throughout the podcast, and you actually have one of your future guests coming up is Mark Davis, right?
Yes, this man adjacent to me here.
Hello.
I had been telling him we wanted to get him on the show since way back, and we were trying to set it up as a live show, but we were still too busy in retrospect just getting our feet underneath us to do something so, you know, bold and audacious. So yeah, I would run into him at the mall and be like, one of these days, and then finally we just, like, you know, let's just do this thing.
Yeah.
And we did the Nice Guys episode. It went great. I haven't heard it yet because Richard takes care of all the editing, my co-creator and producer, and so I get to hear it tomorrow like everybody else. Every Friday I get to hear the new episode, like, for the first time since I said it with the person, so it's kind of fun.
That's really awesome. And just to catch everybody up, if you haven't heard of Three Song Stories, basically you have a guest on.
Yes.
You ask them to kind of walk through the main parts of their life with song.
Well, I'll tell you exactly what we do. We give them, there's a guest ask. I mean, Mark's seen it, and it's like, we want you to pick three songs that most directly connect you to memories or times or people or emotions from your life. You know, some people handle it differently. Some people try to pick three songs that create an arc, kind of like I did with my episode. Some people just pick three completely episodic song moments that are just stories, but then we knit that together with what was the musical background of your childhood, and, you know, what song did you dance to on your first slow dance, and then through that lens of music, by the end I think you really know a person in a way that's different than other kinds of interviewing.
It is a really cool way to get a biography of a person, I think.
Yeah, we call it Biography Through Music. That's our subtitle.
Oh, yeah, awesome.
That is good.
So, are you introduced to a lot of new music, or is it a lot of familiar stuff, usually?
Oh, no, it's mostly new stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, almost every week I'm hearing songs I've never heard. And I don't listen to them prior to the show, either. That's the cool thing. So, the model is we come in, they give us the songs, they send little short versions of the stories to Richard so he can make sure they're, you know, connected to a memory enough. And then they come in, we talk for a little bit, and then we listen to those songs together in their entirety in the moment. And then so they come out of it, and, you know, they're, if it's one of their three songs, it's a song that's taken them places, you know.
Yeah. Have you ever picked up, like, a new favorite group or artist based on these interviews, like, where it's like, wow, I had no idea who this was, but through the show now I've been introduced to them?
Well, I just told you I'll make it quick, but last week's episode was a Canadian singer-songwriter who had sent us a press release, and she was doing a concert at the Unitarian Church in Fort Myers for the Americana Community Music Association. We said, come do the show. She came in. I hadn't even heard any of her music. The episode went great. And then I went and got a hold of her music, or I went and saw her that night and play, and then got a hold of her music, and it's currently my favorite music. So it just happened 2 weeks ago.
Oh, right on. Cool. And I'm sorry, what was her name again?
Shauna Caspi.
Shauna Caspi. And is there, like, a particular album you would recommend or song to seek out?
My current favorite song is called Oleander, Oleander, off of her newest album called Forest Fire.
Cool. We'll put a link to that in the show notes, whatever platform we can find it on.
Roger.
Yeah. So, but thanks for joining us, Mike. I'm really excited. Yeah. We're going to have a music-heavy trivia episode today. You brought some questions, right?
I do. I have some questions. Some are sort of like maybe professional trivia type questions, and some are just sort of questions about Fort Myers or me.
That's
not
great.
A problem at all.
Yeah, we love that. We're interested in learning or knowing or answering and winning this non-game that we play on the podcast.
Well,
no points.
Real quick, I do want to say, I mentioned to Mark, I don't really listen to much music.
Yeah.
And I haven't had, like, cable TV or anything for like 20 years. So I am I have so many huge blind spots in popular culture, some of which you guys are going to find shocking, I promise.
Gotcha. Well, I tried to, you know, I did a little digging ahead of time and listened to your episode of the Three Song Stories podcast. So I did try to tailor questions to things that you may be able to answer. There could be a few. I put a few wild cards in there.
Thank you for doing your due diligence.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we're going to take a little break, and then we'll be back with our first round of questions with Mike Kinnairy. And we're ready for some trivia, Mark?
Yeah.
Mike,
what is your background with trivia?
I can remember perhaps three times being in a bar with a little device and a few people clicking buttons on a question thing happening.
Okay. The buzz time.
I did that at McGregor Grill, I remember.
I spent a lot of time back in the day playing Trivial Pursuit.
That's hard.
A favorite.
I should have brought this. Oh, God, you guys would have loved it. I was so into MASH. As a kid, you know, the TV show, they made a trivia set that went to the Trivial Pursuit board, but it was all MASH categories.
Oh, so you just swap out the cards?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So I did a lot of Trivial Pursuiting back in the day.
That was kind of like the Cards Against Humanity of the day. You get your friends together.
The 80s and early 90s, you know.
And they made all sorts of different sets and stuff like that. That's cool.
Except those cards didn't have anything about cum on them.
Right. Not like Cards Against Humanity
it's
cards.
A little bit
which
different.
All have something about cum on them.
Necrophilia, et cetera. Exactly.
We went through a real arc of playing Cards Against Humanity out at camp. Like, we go camping out on Fish Eating Creek every year, and the adults would be all up late playing Cards Against Humanity. And the one time we realized that the kids had come out, they had not fallen asleep, and they were listening.
Oh, boy.
To...
Yeah, right.
Part of the camp lore.
They know everything now.
Right. All right, here's your guys' first question. We're doing mostly musical. Based.
Right.
So, question number one. On what album will you find Queen's hit song Bohemian Rhapsody?
It's Night at the Opera.
Ooh, very good.
Okay, I'm going to trust you on that one. I was going to say Queen's Greatest Hits. That's what I remember it from. But
yeah, right out of the
it's
gate.
Like track 8, I think.
There you go.
Yeah. That's good.
That's the only Queen album I listen to on repeat a lot. Like when I'm mowing, believe it or not, I listen to Night at the Opera.
Oh, right okay. Fantastic.
Cool. Yeah. All right, here's my first question. This is a soundtracks question. I've got a backup question just in case Mike jumps on this too early, because this is I want to softball it a little bit.
That may be the only thing I get.
Yeah, we'll see. You're hot already. One for one. The question is a movie soundtracks question. What singer-songwriter wrote the songs for the movies Walk Hard and Get 'Em to the Greek?
Dude. That's Dan Byrne.
Yeah, yeah, that's a favorite of yours, right? Dan Byrne?
Yeah, Dan Byrne is definitely, he's on my short list. Mm-hmm. Very there short list.
Yeah, okay, so you're familiar with the film work as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He seems like a talented guy. I had not...
I've met him, and he's. I'm working on getting him on Three Song Stories.
Ooh.
He comes to the Sanibel Island Writers Conference about every other year.
Gotcha.
And we did a live one of that at it last year, and we've been invited back this year, and if Dan's coming, he's doing it.
Yeah,
live on stage, like Mark Davis style.
There you go.
Yeah, I was actually unfamiliar, but then I saw that you recommended the song God Said No in the episode. And holy hell, the lyrics of that song, that is just a great song.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah. Did it just knock you right off your feet the first time you heard it?
Yeah. Yeah. It really did. It was really powerful, and just it's such a good idea for a song, and the execution is really nice.
He has a lot of songs like that, and I describe him as the perfect blend of reverent and irreverent. He's just right where those things meet in the most lyrically clever and brilliant way.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, I'm going to throw my other question at you, cuz you got that one. It's similar though. It's a very similar question. This is another movie soundtracks question.
Dan Byrne.
What? Not a similar answer. Similar question. What indie rock songwriting legend contributed to the soundtrack of and appears several times in the movie There's Something About Mary?
Huh. Jonathan Coulton.
No, you're very close.
Oh.
You're very close.
I can see him. He was the guy from Roadrunner and Modern Lovers. Yep. What was his name?
Jonathan Richman.
Yes,
that's right. Yep. All right. A different Jonathan Blanken.
Now remember, we're on a team. You can consult with me before you go give an answer.
I thought this was just say it all out loud. Oh, see, that's my lack of knowledge of how trivia works.
No. That's fine.
You can deliberate.
We can deliberate. But, if you're sure, like Night of the Opera.
Generally, no. But that one, obviously, I wasn't sure, so I should have said something.
Mark and I will do deliberation
here. I'm excited.
Here.
Simmer down.
Are we ready for our first question?
We're excited, yeah.
Oh, my turn.
It's your turn.
Let's deliberate, Mark.
This one's going to be...
The reading glasses are coming on.
Yeah, I know, right? Sucks, man. I had a laser surgery like 8 years ago, and when my eyes were really bad. I couldn't see distance, and he said, "You're so bad. We've corrected you so much. You're going to need reading glasses early in life." And sure enough, man, I can't see shit. But I can see far just fine. Okay, this is a WGCU-related question. Music from which anime series did WGCU used to use as interstitial music during late-night jazz until we stopped airing it about a year ago?
It's got to be. I don't know much about anime.
I've got two answers.
Well, I bet you one of them is the
same. Did you say the music was jazz?
He said it was during a jazz thing.
It was during the late night jazz. It was the interstitials. So there was
certain places.
It's
got to be Cowboy Bebop.
Certain places where some music had to play to fill time.
My other answer was going to be Fooly Cooly, The Pillows. But I feel like if it's like late night and it's a jazz program, I'm going with Cowboy Bebop.
I think that's what we're going to go with.
Yeah.
Final answer?
Yes.
Yes.
That is correct.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah. And the reason it would be the reason it would be played there is because our program director Richard Chin Kui, co-creator of Three Song Stories, he's who gets to pick that stuff. Oh. And he's a huge Cowboy Bebop fan. And little tip, he's the pilot episode of our podcast, like episode zero. And one of his songs is "Tank," which is the theme song.
3, 2, 1, let's jam.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's part of the show's thing.
Cool.
That's excellent. Yeah.
I'm excited about listening to that episode of the podcast and hearing "Tank" again. Also, the Cowboy Bebop live action movie. That's coming out.
Oh, I had
very interesting.
I'm sure it's starring Richard's heard.
Starring John, what's his name? Is his name John? He plays Sulu in the Star Trek.
Yeah, I was trying to think of his name.
And he's also Harold and Kumar.
Mm-hmm.
John, can't remember his name. Anyways, I think that's great casting though. Looking forward to it.
That sounds fun.
All right, here is your second question.
Team.
Yeah.
Consult.
Yeah, get ready.
Okay.
We're going to deliberate.
Question number 2. In what country was Dave Matthews born?
I think I know that.
Are you thinking, let's say at the same time. 3, 2, 1.
South Africa.
Oh, I think you're right. actually. Your sounds right. South Africa. Now that you say it, I'm 100% on board.
I know he's not from Canada.
Yeah. I feel like in my... Again, I was stalking you a little bit. I feel like in my research, a lot of the musicians that you like, though, are from Canada, right?
Absolutely.
Do you have family there or something? Or do you just... The Canadian style just vibes with
it? It's just something about their groove that grooves with me. I don't know.
Yeah.
Are you a big Kids in the Hall fan?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen him for ages, but sure.
Happy anniversary to Brain Candy last week, right?
I was actually just listening to the Bruce McCullough episode of WTF with Marc Maron a little bit, and it's really, really good.
Yeah, I guess they're promoting reshowing the movie or something?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, to be promoting the anniversary, right? Otherwise, it's extremely coincidental.
Yeah, I think it may have just been coincidence, honestly.
Okay, all right, cool. South Africa is our answer.
It's correct.
Yeah.
Johannesburg.
Not Canada.
No.
I listened to a lot of Dave Matthews back in the 90s.
I what do I have? I have What Would You Say on my trivia playlist. I don't like a lot of Dave Matthews, but that song is a jam. It's a jam for sure.
I remember hearing that song and being blown away by the harmonica, and then finding out it was John Popper from Blues Traveler.
Oh, I did not know that.
Also, if memory serves, also plays the harmonica in the beginning of Roseanne.
Really?
That's what I heard.
Popper
at some
gets
point.
Around.
Dude, if
the original
awesome
harmonica zaddy.
We did talk about how disgusting he is in a previous episode.
Yeah, he's a zaddy. He's a harmonica zaddy.
I don't know. I think he's just what we'd call a gratty, a gross daddy.
Oh. I did, I tried to, they just came down to Florida, Blues Traveler, recently, and I tried to rally some friends. I was going to be in Orlando in Disney Springs when they were playing at House of Blues, and I was like, guys, let's go see Blues Traveler. It'll be amazing. and not one person sided with me. Nobody wanted to go.
Really?
They're even playing at the...
They wanted... You know what we did instead? We drove to four different bars that we couldn't get into.
Perfect.
Until the fourth, which was not a bar. It was, what is it? BurgerFi.
So
it's like a Shake Shack.
John Popper not allegedly, but he wrote some gross tweets to some girls that were talking about him, and it became the whole thing, and he kind of ended up becoming a Jane Grossy. So.
Jane Grossy.
If you were famous before the year 2012, there's gross tweets out there.
Yeah.
That's the rule.
Yeah. All right, we're ready for our third question, or second question.
Is it me? I think it's me, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. I skipped you.
Okay. This is a space question. Cosmic space and music, of course. All music episode. On August 14th, 1997, what a cappella song was used by NASA to wake up the crew of the STS-85?
I got this one.
Jeez.
You don't need the hint?
I'll
give Mark the hint.
Tell me it again. Read the question again.
On August 14th, 1997, what a cappella song was used by NASA to wake the crew of STS-85?
A cappella?
Yeah, the song is a cappella. The performing group is Moxie Fruvis. One of Mike's favorite bands, right?
Yeah.
Right. One of them.
He was wearing a Moxie Fruvis shirt when he did my interview.
They were sort of foundational to me in some ways, in terms of, you know, outlook of the world and willingness to listen to weird stuff. And they were like beginning of my Canadian arc. So yeah.
Gotcha.
So what was the song?
You Will Go to the Moon.
Yes.
Oh.
Very nice harmonies on that.
And they had a Canadian astronaut on board that mission, which is why the astronauts get to pick songs. Every morning song is some astronaut's song. That's like song stories.
Yeah. That's really interesting.
So one of the first things Mike and I connected on was the fact that I had heard of Moxie Fruvis through They Might Be Giants.
They remind me a lot.
He's one of the very few people I've, especially this far down the road. I mean, they started in 92, so you're one of the few people I've come across in the wild who has ever even heard of them.
Yeah, so he mentioned it, because usually one of my first questions whenever I'm getting to know someone is, what music do you listen to, what's your favorite band? He's like, you probably never heard of Moxie Fruvis. I was like, yeah, King of Spain. He was like, say, like, my baby loves a bunch of authors.
I got an email yesterday from the King of Spain.
Really?
Because it came out in the episode last week that Shauna Caspi has Dave Matheson on her latest album, and she put me in touch with him about doing the show.
Oh, wow.
He politely declined, but he said hi, and I said, it's really neat to get a note from you, and thank you. So there's a coincidence.
Good enough.
There you go.
Just ask him tomorrow, and then the next day.
Get someone to switch out with him.
No. It's out there. If it comes back, it comes back.
True. All right, you got another question for us?
Yeah, I do.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We're hungry for questions.
Yeah.
Gimme.
Yeah, like I said, I didn't really know what to do about questions, and then all of a sudden they came to me.
There you go.
Okay, this one's a little local, you know, history. I think you guys both, there's an outside chance, or maybe you'll just know it. What was the name of the band that was sort of the house band of Liquid Cafe back in the day? They were a three-piece. They did basically mostly covers. They weren't formally our housebound band, but they were local, and people liked them, and they'd fill the place, and they'd play covers, and they played there a lot. And one of the members last week opened for Sister Christian.
Sister Christian is the name of the song.
Yeah, Night Ranger.
Night Ranger, yes.
One of them opened for Night Ranger last week at the Bonita Springs Center for the Arts.
So for our listeners that aren't in Southwest Florida, Liquid Cafe was a prominent venue / hangout in downtown Fort Myers.
It was the center of all that was good.
Yeah. Think of the Matrix era. The Matrix just came out and is popular.
Uh-huh.
This is the era. And my band played there a couple times, my high school band. Mark, the Inquiry 4, played there, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So, I think the first time I saw you guys was at the Liquid Cafe, actually.
Very well could be.
When you were a four-piece.
Yeah.
In the band, when you were a literal Anchorite 4, instead of three men posing as a foursome.
Exactly.
So there was a house band.
There was, you guys were on the edgier side of the train, and they were more on the, you know, we'll play any song you throw at
us.
And so you guys may never even have been there on the nights that they played, because you guys were young and cool.
I'm sure I was.
Going to some other coffee shop where they played punk music or something.
I'm sure I was there, but I don't remember. Do you remember any of the people that were in the band? name wise?
Well, the guy that just opened for Night Ranger is Steve Farst. One of the other guys, I know their names. Jimmy Richards, who still plays out on Fort Myers Beach a lot, and Mark Kobe of Kobe Cooling, who I don't know if he plays anymore or not.
Yeah, I don't know. It's reaching too far back for me.
I don't got it either. I'm trying to do any kind of like association with the Liquid Cafe. And yeah, I remember
the creamers.
I remember playing and and thinking like, "Whoa, it's cool. It's really late and I'm in here."
What was it like though to be on, like, to be just, you know, one of the people out in the scene, cuz we were weaving it. What was it like to
it
be
was,
there?
It was cool. It was the hip spot, you know? Yeah. Like everybody, I mean, we definitely saw that as like a legitimate venue, mm-hmm. as opposed to playing like garage shows, which is what we were doing most of the
time.
Well,
and if anybody around here is here now, I mean, it's right there on the corner of First and Hendry, where the British place is, that has
United
the black
Cafe.
And white United Cafe. Yeah. But back then, I mean, it was us, and it was Indigo, and then mm-hmm. there were a couple clubs where the bass was pumping, and that was it. That was all of downtown. It was all just lawyers and, you know, stuff like that. So we were, it was pretty
cool. The Chocolate Schmooze was another spot down there that we liked.
Yeah, them for a bit in the zoo.
Yeah, and the Draft House.
Yep.
Yeah.
I can't pull this name. What do we got?
Skinny Dippers.
Skinny Dippers. Okay. Yeah, that's ringing a bell.
I bet you Seth is yelling that right now.
Skinny Dippers! By the way, one of the notes I took last night is, Seth was right there on the front lines of the scene that we were just describing.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Member of the strip club
moms.
Him
and all of his brothers, yes.
Yep. Yeah, the Fords of Chaos.
Yeah.
All right, here is your last question of the first round. Richard Wright and Nick Mason are members of what famous band?
I got nothing.
Richard Wright and Nick Mason?
Yep. Finally, I've stumped Mike.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I'm going to think on it, though.
Mm-hmm.
So you just said, what famous band? That's the clue, is that they're famous?
Famous.
Big band.
What's the name's
name? Unlike the Skinny Dippers.
Exactly. Unlike the Skinny Dippers.
Richard Wright and Nick Mason.
Richard Wright. I feel like I got something on Richard Wright.
What do you got?
I mean, I have a theory. I don't know yet. What's your theory?
Well, my logic here is maybe this is some kind of like reverse prank, and it's like Jefferson Airplane or something like that.
You know? I'm not that clever.
No? Okay.
Read the question again.
Which ties
Richard
into Mark's
Wright
three song
and
stories
Nick
episode.
Mason are members of which famous band?
Can I ask like a context kind of question?
Sure.
Are they the only members?
No.
Oh, okay. See.
There are two other main members.
I'm going to go with that then.
Can we get any hint?
Nick Mason plays drums. Richard Wright plays keyboards.
Hmm. Keyboards and drums are in
And
the
Richard
band.
Wright is dead now, for what it's worth.
Okay. Jamiroquai's keyboardist is dead. I know that's a morbid way to get there, but
wow.
I know that, at least.
Yeah.
So that's an educated guess. How's our drummer? Is he still kicking it?
He's still kicking it.
So, band with a dead keyboardist that stayed with the band long enough to be known as like a member of the band.
Yes.
It's not the Doors. That would be Ray Manzarek.
Yeah, not the Doors.
I'm just trying to think. Nick Mason. Nick Mason. Nick Mason.
Are you just going to say Nick Mason a lot in different ways?
What was the keyboardist's name?
Nick Mason, Richard Wright. Nick Mason?
The keyboardist that performed a lot with the Talking Heads, I don't even think he was considered to be a member of the Talking Heads, but his name was Bernie something, right?
Yes.
Okay, so it's not Talking Heads. I was like, was Nick Mason the drummer for the Talking Heads?
Chris Franz.
Thank you.
You're
Chris,
welcome.
Chris, married to Tina Weymouth? Or just
the bassist.
Did they get married?
Yep.
Good. That's good. The rhythm section coming together there.
And Jerry Harrison on rhythm guitar and keyboards, and of course David Byrne singing.
Right. They weren't in the relationship with Chris and Tina, though, right?
It was not a polyamorous...
I don't think it's going to be Jamiroquai. I mean, that's just so unlike Mark to have Jamiroquai as an answer.
I haven't listened to a lot of Wolfpack.
That's the third time that's come up in my little spectrum in the last, like, 3 days.
Wolfpack?
Yeah.
They're amazing.
They're all...
I don't know what they sound like, but they keep popping up.
Whenever we talk
about it.
Yeah.
They're so good.
Whenever they come up on the mix in my trivia, people, they're an instrumental band.
Okay.
People listen. They perk up.
Generally, they're an instrumental, yes. But they've done a lot of stuff.
The songs, and I just remembered where I first heard them, because these three times I was like, where do I know that from? A guest on Three Song Stories mentioned them, actually. Nathan Hill, the novelist.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, they're great.
He listens to them when he's writing.
They get some. Oh, that's perfect.
That would drive me nuts, I think. I'd be like, why am I writing when I could be playing bass?
Joe Dart.
I don't know.
I got nothing, man. The harder I try, the more I feel like I know something, but I don't think it works that way.
The answer is Pink Floyd.
Wow.
Roger Waters, and of course David Gilmour.
Wow, I like Pink Floyd. Yeah, I feel like I should know that.
I was afraid that was going to be another snap to know. Yeah. Nick Mason on drums and Richard Wright on keyboards and organs.
I don't have that.
Yep. Well, now you do. Yeah, I hope.
I do. Thank you for that.
I have to remember that now.
There you go.
And Syd Barrett at one point.
Yes.
I would have known that.
My turn, right?
Yes, third question.
Okay. Mike, you said that the Police were very important to you in high school. They're the first band that really grabbed you.
Yep.
Is what you said, right?
Yep.
I'm gonna test your memory here. Wondering if you guys can name all five Police albums that were released from 1978 to 1983 in order.
Oh, in order. That's going to be really hard.
No.
No, I don't think I can do them.
I can even name all five albums.
Outlandish D'Amour.
That is the first one.
Ghost in the Machine.
Number four.
Synchronicity.
Number five.
Regatta de Blanc.
Regatta de Blanc.
Number two.
And
what's that middle album?
Well, it's not the singles came later, right? The Every Breath You Take, the singles was like...
Yeah, full albums.
Yeah.
You know, I have a question where it's what band released these three albums? And
this is one of them.
Regatta de Blanc, I know, was one of them. That's where I pulled that one from.
These first three, they just had a wild time with these album titles, the first three albums.
Oh,
Ghost of the Machine is the first one that you can remember easily.
I can't believe I don't know this.
Let me see what's on it here. Maybe it can bring back some memories.
Material World.
Don't Stand So Close to Me is on this album.
Never heard it.
I wrote a paper my junior year of high school on that song. Jane Renfro was the teacher.
Do you know where... Gordon Sumner wrote the name of that song, I'll Be Watching You. Do you know that story?
I don't. I know that's his name.
Mm-hmm. Sting, the Sting Man.
No, I don't know the story. Was he like, you know, creeping on someone?
No. It's actually, he was aware of the creepiness of the song, and he's disappointed in listeners for not figuring it out, but he actually wrote that while on vacation in Jamaica at the same desk where Ian Fleming wrote some James Bond novel. He was inspired to write I'll Be Watching You at that desk. The album. The third Police album.
What is it?
Zenyatta. Mandata.
Jesus, that should have been the easiest one.
Zenyatta Mandata.
Yeah, tell me about it.
I've got that on my phone.
So close. All right, Mike, you got a third and final question for us this round.
Decide which one to. Okay, here we'll stick with the Canada theme for round one. What Egyptian Canadian singer, songwriter, author, and anti-war activist has a net worth of $10 million, mostly made by singing kids' songs?
One more time. Sorry.
Egyptian-Canadian artist.
Mm-hmm. Egyptian-Canadian singer, songwriter, author, and anti-war activist who has a net worth of $10 million, according to Wikipedia, mostly made by singing children's songs.
Children's song singer.
Egyptian-Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
$10 million. Anti-war activist.
That's just what his bio says on Wikipedia.
It's a male.
Oh, thank goodness we got that hit.
Yeah, thank you, Mike.
By the way, would this be a diet virgin Mark Davis?
Yes, it would.
Man's holding a root beer right now.
A diet root beer. A and W.
Well, children's songs. That to me is like a big limiter, you know? Like, if we could figure out a pool of children's singer-songwriters.
Yeah.
Like Rafi. Banana Phone.
Hmm.
I think we should go with that.
I've never seen... I don't know anything about him, except that song. Do-do-do-do-do! Does a lot of those. He also did Baby Beluga, if I recall correctly, which I remember watching on Fox TV as a kid. They had, like... You know, you're watching X-Men, the X-Men cartoon, and they're like, we gotta get some learning in there. Let's put up a picture of a whale and tell them whales exist. TV doesn't rot this kid's brain out. And we'll put Baby Beluga over it. That would be my guess, because that's the only solo children's artist that I can think of. He is probably Canadian. He could be Egyptian. And, I mean, single name Rafi, that is just such a friendly name. Of course he's going to be anti-war. Right? Rafi? Yeah.
Let's say Rafi.
You're not pro-war if your name's Rafi.
I shouldn't have said he,
man. It really did help. It really did help.
Well, because there's probably like only two of them on the planet, and I narrowed it down.
My first thought was...
Well done, fellas.
My first thought was, is Celine Dion Egyptian and not French? Have I been duped?
Oh.
Not that she even makes children's music, but yeah. All right. So I think that's it, right?
That's it for the first round.
Yeah, for first round. We're going to be back with some miscorrections. We got some mess to clean up. And then we're going to have some more questions here with Mike and Irie. Alright, we're back. Before we get into round two, though, we've got some miscorrections.
Miscorrections.
I like that note, that wild note on the end, Mike. Thank you. Thanks.
So that's the jazz in him.
Yeah. That's that that cowboy bebop.
I have so much jazz.
Alright, we got two miscorrections this week.
Okay.
First comes from friend of the show, Gary. Gary wanted to point out, FYI, refueling was banned in Formula One in 2009, so no refueling during pit stops. I don't think 1 second stop would be possible without refueling.
That's what I was thinking when you were saying it just like blows the gas, and I was like, I don't know how that's possible, but holy shit.
That's what, yeah, I mean...
That explains it. I was wondering last night, too.
Right, yeah. We tried to engineer it out. We were like, they gotta just shotgun blast that fuel in, somehow. Right.
Well, that's why I was like, well, maybe if it burns fuel really efficiently somehow, but it wouldn't going that fast.
Yeah, because people were bursting into flames. That is what was happening.
Well, probably, yeah. Oh, yeah.
There would be a leak, and it would be like this alcohol flame you couldn't see, and everybody would be like freaking out. Yeah.
I was thinking about, like, okay, if you're trying to get fuel into something quickly, that's ripe for accidents, basically. Yep. So that totally makes sense. So that's the first miscorrection. And then we have a very nice note here from listener Aaron. Aaron writes, I work overnights at a hotel and have been binge listening to your podcast. You are basically the Car Talk guys of trivia, and that is fucking amazing. Side note, I have to agree, that is amazing. That hit me in the feels, really. That's like when I heard that.
That's top notch.
How can compare us to Click and Clack?
It's hard for me to think of a higher compliment, basically.
Seriously.
Back to the note here, though. He's got to bring us down after that. However, I have a miscorrection for you guys from forever ago that you didn't mention in the following episode, unless I missed it. Episode 8, titled Rumpelsnailtskin. To name, at roughly around the 50-minute mark, the question challenge was to name all 7 of the historical figures that Bill and Ted bring from the past to the present. I immediately paused your podcast out of disgust.
Ooh.
And wrote down all 8 of those figures.
Shame.
And then press play. Rod Loomis's performance may have been forgettable. That's a little shade thrown at us right there. But Sigmund Freud hitting on girls in the mall was not. And I have to agree. Once that sentence brings me right back, and we totally forgot about Sigmund Freud. Other than that, and your pronunciation of organ, which is entirely my fault. I'm pretty sure Mark knows that bad habits hard to break. Fantastic podcast. Please keep giving me stuff to nerd to while filing paperwork. Aaron.
Thank you very much for listening, Aaron. We're sorry we let you down.
Yeah, and glad to hear you're enjoying the podcast, and hopefully, you know, your hotel guests can overhear us talking about how Cards Against Humanity has come written on every card.
Hi, Mom.
Yeah. If you have any miscorrections, if you hear anything that's out of sort, or if you have a rate my question, you have your own question you want to submit, write us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com, and we'll get to that in a future episode if we like it. All right. Let's go ahead and get into round two.
And I believe you'll be starting this round.
That I will. Mr. I will. Lee. Okay. Question number one. Singer-songwriter Jonathan Coulton.
Huh.
Funny that you brought him up earlier.
Yeah.
Got a Jonathan Coulton question for you. Wrote the song Still Alive for what video game?
Hmm.
The song Still Alive.
Richard did know this.
I'll tell you who would know this is not me. Is anybody that's
this is another great song.
Say it again.
Jonathan Coulton wrote the song Still Alive for what video game? And if you're unfamiliar with Jonathan Coulton, hilarious singer-songwriter.
Hilarious singer-songwriter, like, got big on the internet, sold his songs for like a buck a piece, and was doing like a song a week for years, I think.
It was like 2009, Radiohead in Rainbows era, where everybody's like, can we just give the music
away? Brains, the Eat Your Brains song. Mm-hmm. And
Code Monkey.
There's this great mashup video on YouTube of like anime set to Code Monkey, so it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, that's classic internet video right there.
That is.
But still,
he was based on these songs. He was invited to write a song for a video game.
I don't game, so that's my other thing. Is I gave up gaming when it went online in the 90s because I played it all day and all night, like Doom, like Quake, like when Quake went online that first time where you could play. Ooh, that was when I gave up gaming. That's why I'm here today.
So he said that he was doing the.
I've set limits for myself as well. It's tough.
Video game, it's a spectator sport for me, which is funny because now it is actually a spectator sport. Right. I've been saying that since the late 90s, and now people watch it on TV.
Everybody get high and watch their friend play Super Mario 32 or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Why not people get high and watch people play Halo from the comfort of their own home?
I watched hundreds of hours of Crash Bandicoot back in the late 90s.
I did 32 tabs of acid and sat down and watched someone play Tetris for 5 days.
Yeah.
It was just the same minute on loop, though.
That's all it was. Well, okay, so...
I'll give you a hint.
A video game that has a song called I'm Alive, or Still Alive.
So it would have to be a game from, like...
Maybe, like, Resident Evil?
I don't know. I got nothing.
I'll tell you, the game started as a tech demo by the developer Valve.
Okay. I do know video games via Reddit. Like, okay. I've absorbed a lot of video game knowledge.
This is a memeable game.
The only Valve game I know of is Half-Life.
So it would have been like the early days of Valve?
I mean, it's hard for me to say what's early. Early to mid, I would say. It's not recent, but...
Yeah, I mean...
I believe Half-Life 2 was already out.
That's going to say is Half-Life 2 because I remember the Valve logo in the beginning was a face with a valve on it.
Right.
I remember
back
that
of the neck
burning into my retinas.
Got that 90s Ray Gun magazine logo style grungy. It's a human with a valve on him. You're going to tap him. You're going to tap him.
Do you
him
have any ideas
out.
For any other Valve games?
No, I don't. I really honestly have nothing.
Yeah.
The song Still Alive is from the game Portal.
You know what? That was actually, if I had made a stupid out of the blue guess, that would be the one. Because in the Gulf Coast Live studio, true story, we have two big screens up, and the background is two different portals that Richard put there.
Yep.
And Richard has told me he's going to give me, I'm considering doing some gaming.
Ooh.
And he, just to see if I felt like maybe doing it, he was going to give me like one of his old systems that has portals. He's like, you should just get this, hack it up to your computer, you didn't play Portal.
So it's a masterpiece game.
Okay.
It is. Well, and it's artfully done. Jonathan Coulton.
I had that in my brain.
Yeah. He wrote the song from the perspective of like a evil sentient robot, and you destroy the robot at the end of the game, spoiler alert, and then the song plays over the credits.
Yeah,
Still Alive.
You need
and
to play it, right?
It's kind of auto-tuned. It's worth the journey. It's a puzzle game, so
the cake is a lie, etc.
But
big shout out, by the way, to Richard Chinqui, who's the producer and sound engineer on your guys' stuff.
We are co-creators, and he's hosted it 4 times, and we'll host it more. But yeah, big shout out to Richard
and Tara Callaghan.
Yep, Tara Callaghan,
who's also on the 3 Song Stories.
She's going into the 3 Song Stories chair tomorrow morning at 10:30 a.m.
Oh yes,
her
I'm
script
excited
is
for
already
that.
Written. Her opener is already produced.
Beautiful. Cool. Beautiful.
Looking forward to it.
Hi, Tara. Hi, Richard.
Yeah.
All right. It is time for your second or first question for the second round.
Put my glasses
get
back
to put
on.
Those glasses back on.
This is like personal about me. So you have really very little reason to know, or to you have no reason to know it.
What if we both get it at the same time?
But I am going to give you a one solid fact that you might be able to dig something out.
We can suss it out.
What is the name of the band that had one song that got super popular, like annoyingly super popular?
The New Radicals.
Whose song, All I Need, is what wakes me up every morning off my phone's alarm clock. Like, I have it play a song.
All I Need.
All I Need. This is the song that made them popular, or this is another song?
No.
This is another song.
99.999% of people only know one song by them.
I see. But All I Need is your preferred song.
No, it's just what I like to wake up to.
Okay.
And you won't tell us what the big song is. That would be a dead giveaway.
Oh, God. Yeah. Okay. I mean, everybody on the planet heard this song for a while.
What year did it get big?
I'm going to say 2011, 2012, 2013, somewhere in that range.
2019?
No, like 2012. Probably
really big.
Centered on that.
All I Need.
And remember how I described it. Glaringly, annoyingly popular.
Mm-hmm. That's so much music.
It's too early for Baby
and
Shark.
And popular might be even the wrong word. Just pervasive.
I see. Yeah. Is it that, what's the name of the band that did the What Does the Fox Say? Was that 2013?
I don't think it's,
That seems like a band that Mike would listen to.
Oh, what about,
I have never actually even heard that song.
Oh, okay.
What about,
so many people told me to listen to it. That's how I, that's something I will resist
that,
doing.
That one was pervasive.
Yes. What about Psy?
Oh, Gangnam Style?
Yeah, Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. Okay.
Does he say Gangnam Style? It sounds like he says Gangnam Style.
Maybe it's Gangnam. Which is the giant robot? Gundam?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's Gundam.
Yeah. Maybe him? I don't know that you have a song called
All I Need.
All I Need, but maybe.
And you said group, right?
Yeah.
So it's a group.
Okay, I'll narrow it down a little bit. It's a group, but it's mostly one dude who has had different bands for each project that he puts together. Mm. Mostly like kind of house musicians, I think. I mean, maybe I'm overstating that. I don't want to get the facts
World
wrong.
World Class Wrecking Crew.
He's at least played with different people. I don't know exactly why. I don't want to mischaracterize.
I wish my recall of pervasive annoying songs.
As soon as I say it, you both are going to be like, oh,
yeah, yeah.
Beep.
Right. That's
you can cuss on this.
Well, you know, Richard and I talked before the show. It was like, yeah, I think I'm going to keep it on the rails.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, and then we're talking about
cum
all
we'll
over
talk
cards.
About the cum here.
Yeah. we'll get
you say we've already sullied our name. You
don't
you
worry,
save
Mike.
Yourself.
We'll worry about we'll take care of the cum.
I will not chastise you.
Group annoyingly pervasive song.
But see, I'm not. I think you're thinking of annoying songs. I mean, I guess it could be that that blue baba dee boo da bum. When was
that's,
that big?
That's way before 2013. Okay. That's like 98.
See, I'm not
blue.
Thinking
another clue. I got more clues.
Yeah, sure. I'll take as many clues as you can give.
Sort of associated with, or at least was recorded at Red Bull Records in like somewhere down like in Jamaica or something like that. So it's part of that like Red Bull vibe.
Shaggy.
What was the name of that group? Now you're saying house musicians. I'm thinking of literal house music now.
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
It's a non-traditional rock band.
Oh, okay.
That plays real music with instruments on stage. Okay. I've seen them live.
Let's think of that group that Eric Wareheim did the music for Pod de Flore.
Major Lazer.
Yeah, Major Lazer. That would be a 2013 pervasive.
But what song?
That song would be the pervasive one, I would think.
Let's go with them.
Well, he says it's a traditional band, though.
Oh.
Yeah. I've got more clues.
I love it, because there's somebody that's listening that knows it, and they're going to get all the glory. On us. So what's
their logo is on my hat.
Oh, okay. That's an A and an N. And I think the song you're referring to is by AWOL Nation.
You got it.
Okay.
Oh, I don't know them. Beautiful.
I don't know the lyrics, but it's like hip-a-da!
They have three albums, and there are some tracks on there that are really definitely worth listening to that are so far away from that song. That's just the one that struck rich.
You know what's funny, though, is that something about that song kept me away from it, but it saved it for me because I can hear it and it doesn't, it's not
well,
really,
then you do, you see it. Yeah,
I avoided it and I've just heard
like
it
me with maybe I'll like the Fox one.
Right. Yeah. Cause you avoided it. So now it's like, oh, this is kind of new, you know? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
All right. Here is your guys' question. First question from me. Mm-hmm. We skipped the light fandango is the first line to what song by what band?
I got a guess.
We skipped the light fandango?
Yes.
Something popped into my head, whether it's right or wrong.
Another Queen song. they're not using fandango. They're not double dipping on the fandango, are they?
That's not a Queen, I don't think.
What's your thought, Mike?
My first thing that popped into my head is the Decemberists.
We skip the light, fandango.
Right,
something like that.
Fandango.
But I really have only listened to one of their albums, and I don't think it's on any of those songs necessarily. So maybe
I will say I listened to their first two or three albums pretty heavily, and that unless it's Crane Wife or after, I'm not recognizing that because that's when I gave up on them.
Oh. Well, see, then I didn't ever listen to any of their early albums. The one I have that I listened to is, this is the one I listen to on repeat when I'm making art.
Okay.
I'll just put it in the background and just play it over and over again. It's called
The Crane Wife, Picaresque, The Tane EP.
Mm-hmm.
What am I missing? I'm missing an earlier Decemberist.
The Castaways.
Castaways and Cutouts.
Cutouts.
What a Terrible World, What a Beautiful World, 2015.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. I mean, if it's on there and it sounds like I don't know that album, so if you feel like
like I said, I'm pretty sure it's not. For whatever reason, the nature of that lyric made me think of them. Or maybe it is them and Mark's just keeping his poker face.
We tripped the light fandango?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't tripping the light fantastic something?
Yeah.
That's like a... an opening line of a book or something.
That's like a Kipling thing, or Rudyard Kipling. Was that something he said?
In the Jungle Book? Or something else?
Knights of
he wrote a lot of
what's
stuff.
What's his... the Charge of the Light Brigade. Mm. I think he... Yeah.
Jamiroquai.
Everything is Jamiroquai.
I don't know. I guess let's go with the Decemberists. Maybe your gut instinct. I can't place it.
Right?
Yep. What do you got?
So the... First of all, the term you're thinking of is Trip of the Light Fantastic, which means to dance.
Oh.
Or to trip.
Oh, okay.
Why
wouldn't you just say trip then?
Well, it's both.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it can mean either. But I think it ended up meaning to trip the light fantastic meant to dance, but maybe I'm wrong. We skipped the light fandango, turned cartwheels across the floor. I was feeling kind of seasick, but the crowd called out for more. The first lines of Pearl Call Harum's A Whiter Shade of Pale.
Wow.
Oh,
okay.
I remember, I remember...
Big, long sigh of knowing.
Yeah.
Duh.
This is a song you recommended to me years ago, I remember. You hadn't heard it in a while. And you were like, remember the song, listen to it. We were at Nice Guys. And, it was good, but I did not remember those lyrics. Record those.
There's a great Alton Ellis version of it, a ska version of it that's really, really good. Yeah.
Cool. Right on. All right. Here's your second question, guys.
Okay.
Band names. The band name Bare Naked Ladies was conceived by band members Stephen Page and Ed Robertson while pretending to be snooty rock critics and inventing backstories and names for the backing band of what artist?
Wow.
I listen to a lot of Bare Naked Ladies, but I gotta say, I don't know much about their, bits.
Yeah. Pretending to be the backing band of what major artist?
So they were not in... They had a band, but they didn't have a name for the band. But they were just hanging out. And they went to see this artist. And before the show started, band members, roadies, and people were coming out. People associated with the artist. And they were sitting there kind of like doing a color commentary as snooty rock historians and inventing back histories of the people that they saw on stage. And they called this artist band the Bare Naked Ladies. Weeks later, They get a call. They need to play a show. What's the band name? They're Naked Ladies.
Describe how did you characterize how famous the person is? Like, what's the question say again?
It just says what artist. They were there to see an artist.
Oh, so it didn't say like super famous or anything like that.
Well, they're from Canada.
Yes.
Big in the Canadian thing we're going. We're going very deep. So I'm trying to think of a famous Canadian artist. I don't know if they'd be Canadian or not, but maybe like Bryan Adams.
I will say this is this, I would categorize this individual as legendary.
I was thinking Bob Dylan and the Bare Naked Ladies.
That works for me. We'll go with Bob Dylan.
Bob Dylan is correct.
Holy cow. There it is. It's amazing, isn't it? When you just kind of throw something out there and you end up being right.
It's like, that's like collective consciousness shit.
Yeah, it's hive mind.
I mean, if you're thinking like, what music legend would Bare Naked Ladies go see?
That's why I wanted to see if you had said super famous.
Right, yeah.
But then when you were like, no, I was like, anyway, wow.
Well, I just said no because I didn't specify, but yeah. It's, you know, when you're a live trivia host, you have to have, like, a perfect poker face, basically.
Because
teams are trying to get hints out of you all the time. Did you say this? Did you say this? Yeah. And they're trying to read your face.
Yeah, you guys are experts.
Yeah, so.
I'm just a padawan.
All right. Here is your second question.
Is it Mike's turn?
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right.
Yeah.
It is Mike's turn.
Oh, I couldn't remember. Okay. Let's see which question. What super famous and familiar song by a super... Oh, here, super famous. That's funny. I didn't even know it's going there.
Must be a Dylan song.
What, exactly. Okay, collect myself. What super famous and familiar song by a super famous and familiar composer was not even published until someone found it 40 years after his death?
Super famous song by super famous composer, and it was not published until 40 years after his death. How's your super classical,
famous,
bud?
Oh, not good. I mean, when I think of super famous, it's got to be Bach, Beethoven, Tchaikovsky, maybe.
If it was Requiem by Brahms, that would be ironic.
Wouldn't it?
It's like he died, and then like, oh, here's this.
Do not you think?
That would seem obvious, though. Like, if he wrote it, he'd be like, hey, you gotta play this at my funeral, obviously, right?
Yeah. Listen.
Super famous, though.
Super famous song.
Mm-hmm.
Song that even if you don't do classical, you've if you hear it,
I'm
you've
thinking
heard
like
it.
For Elise or something. Who did For Elise?
Mozart?
Let's go with Mozart. No. No, let's not.
Beethoven.
Let's go with Beethoven.
I like, but you're asking for the song.
I am.
So we can't. We can't just
let's
give
go with For Elise.
For Elise by Beethoven. I was thinking maybe one of his numbered symphonies. That is probably a numbered symphony. They all have like three names.
But wouldn't it be sweet if they had the song that was For Elise that they found after he died?
Is that what that means?
I think so.
That would make sense. Yeah. Now that you're telling me that, but I never tried to translate it in my head. All right. Let's go with it. For Elise by Beethoven.
You're right.
Whoa, Mark! Look at you,
guys.
Look at you,
guys.
It's happening.
I'm giving you all that.
It's happening. It's really happening. See, this is where our brains bleed into each other.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Mark,
here is your second round.
Mark.
Celine Dion. Bryan Adams. Rush, and yes, even Moxie Fruvis. All hail from the Great White North. How many territories and provinces are there in Canada?
Mike's counting. I'm going to let him count.
I'm going to say four.
Oh, four? Five? My first thought was seven. So
okay. I mean, unless there's some up there that I've never heard the name of, I don't feel like I know names of more than about four or five, but I don't even know if I can say them out loud, so then maybe I don't know them.
We were, we were chastised on the podcast for not knowing this, Mark. So, for you to throw it back at me.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool, man?
Hey, brother. All's fair in trivia.
Well, it's, I mean,
I don't know. I'm not going to think out this one in my head.
I say a lot of wrong stuff on the podcast, so I don't mind jumping in here. Quebec. No. Is a city.
It's a city.
That's a city. So that's wrong. Right off. Right out of the gate.
Ontario.
Ontario, thank you.
Saskatchewan.
Mm-hmm.
What's the one to the left?
Alberta?
I think that's a city, too.
That's a city.
Yeah. So I'm really into Canadian music and the sort of the vibe.
But the geography.
Not so much the
and
geography.
And like the borders.
The data points.
So you said four.
I say four or five.
I don't know why. I'm feeling five. Let's go with five and I'll owe you an apology.
Five.
Is it five?
The answer is 13.
13, okay.
Bam.
The provinces are...
Sorry, Canada.
The provinces are... And it's funny that I put this question right after so many questions about Canada.
Yeah.
The provinces are Alberta, British Columbia, Manitoba, New Brunswick, Newfoundland, and Labrador, Nova Scotia.
I didn't even get any right.
Ontario, Prince Edward Island, Quebec... And Saskatchewan.
Right, yeah.
Oh, and the three territories are the Northwest Territories, Nunavut, and Yukon.
Yeah. Bad at Canada.
I'm going to clip this little list, and I'm just going to play it as I go to sleep every night so I don't forget again. Sorry to so Taylor. I think like Taylor was who wrote
I'm
going to
come up
honestly.
Like a, you know, one of those
mnemonic devices.
Yeah.
There's probably I bet there's probably one out there. We've done a little mnemonic play on the podcast before. try and help ourselves.
Oh goodness.
All right. Okay. I have a question for you about a world music icon. How's your world music knowledge?
I've got a bit.
Okay.
How often do you listen to World Cafe?
Oh, I used to listen to World Cafe all the time on Friday nights with Talia Schlanger. She's on my short list for three song stories.
Ooh.
But then we dropped all the music stuff, so now I would have to podcast it, and I only listen mostly to terrestrial radio. So not much anymore, but I used to listen all the time. Sorry.
Yeah.
Divergence.
Oh, it's all good. It's all good. They have more than World Cafe is not a world music show though.
Oh no, no,
it's
no.
World
no,
perspective.
No. Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Oh no, it's just a music show.
Gotcha. Described as a combination of blaring horn sections, antiphonal vocals. And I ruined this one. We're going to skip that. I got another question. Got a backup question here.
Okay.
Did you guys hear the answer?
Maybe. I don't know. I didn't have much on it. So.
I said the first like syllable. I mean, let's record it. And if you guys know it immediately because of what I said, then we'll ax it.
Okay.
Described as a combination of blaring horn sections, antiphonal vocals, the singer's quasi-rapping pidgin English, and percolating guitars, all wrapped up in a smoldering groove. Afrobeat is a genre and sound developed by what Nigerian band leader, who is also known as the Black President?
Oh, I have no idea.
I have none. We heard the answer, though, so ask the other one.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
What was the answer?
No, I don't know. But...
No.
Oh, no, yeah, we heard it. We just don't want to embarrass you by saying it.
Well, I'm going to leave it in. If you guys aren't familiar, you should definitely know, and our listeners should know as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I don't know.
This is Fela Kuti.
Oh.
Are you familiar with Fela Kuti?
I know the name. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
His shit is so good. Grab at just Google him and play anything. Play anything. But... Also, the song Water No Get Enemy, that's probably my favorite. Zombie is another good one. They're about 8 or 9 minutes long. They have a lot of saxophone, guitar, funk rhythm. Talking Heads basically ripped this guy off big time. But
I'm sure they played proper.
But I'm just saying, if you like you know, that kind of 70s funk style, you can't get better than Fela Kuti. Look him up. Okay. I think there's a biopic coming out. Next year, too. They're working on something.
We're writing that biopic up on the biorhythm.
They're the new superhero movies. It's just like, it's going to be the number one style of entertainment.
Now that the MCU is coming to a close temporarily.
All right. So that's, Fela Kuti. Check him out.
Ooh. Try taking that. Try taking that one out in post. Good luck.
That's going to be our new wrong answer sound.
All right, Mike.
You got the straw poll.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to ask you this one. So which world-famous rock band did one of my best friends since childhood nearly wind up the lead singer of after they found him on YouTube because he sang in a tribute band to them? And by nearly wound up with, I mean he spent 2 weeks with them auditioning, writing. He got a writing credit on their next album, but that they ended up going with somebody else.
And you said singer.
Singer.
Singer was
lead. Lead singer of a super famous, worldwide famous rock band.
What year did this happen?
This happened in 2000. Wait, let me do the math here.
World famous rock band.
It would have been like 2010.
I feel like
2012, 11, 9, somewhere in there. Late 2000s. Late aughts, as they say.
I feel like I remember seeing a viral video go around of a guy singing Don't Stop Believin', the Journey.
Well, I know that there was a guy for Journey that replaced...
Right, and I'm wondering if this other video, though, is a guy who could have almost replaced the guy from Journey. Or, wait, is that song... Is that Journey or is that Boston?
That's Journey.
Okay. That would be my guess.
I don't think it's right. I'll go with it because I know I'm not going to be able to think of the other thing. But
is your friend bald?
Nope.
Maybe it's a different guy. I feel like I remember this being a bald guy in the video, but maybe not. And I don't know. Something is like saying like, oh yeah, he was from Florida too. Is your friend from Florida?
He wasn't at the time.
Don't go with my answer.
He grew up.
This is not turning out well.
But he was not in Florida when all this like occurred.
Okay.
Could it be Alice in Chains?
Did they? I don't think they tried to resurrect Alice in Chains, did they?
They're still around, dude. Yeah, they have another
song. Oh, yeah, that's right.
They're writing new music and stuff. But I was trying to think of when Layne Staley died.
That was in the 90s. It wasn't.
No, he died after the 90s, I think. Maybe like the late.
It had to be like The Matrix.
That's why I guess, kind of.
As our time touchstone that we're using for this episode. This episode is about music, Canada, and The Matrix. And the year 1999. I don't think it's Alice in Chains. I feel stronger about Journey. I don't know why. I mean, think about what... Would an Alice in Chains vocal cover go viral? Would a Journey vocal cover go viral? Hell yeah,
let me give you it didn't. He never. No video of his ever went viral.
Oh, they just came across it.
They started scouring YouTube, and they found a video of him. Mm. So they were proactively looking.
Doing covers.
Tribute
a world famous rock band who does not have their original singer anymore. Now they got a Filipino dude to sing for Journey. Mm-hmm. And then it actually got to the point where their old singer, Stephen Perry, was good enough to come back because he had the vocal damage. And they were like, no, they wouldn't let him back in the band, which is awful. But I don't think they ever got rid of the Filipino dude, but maybe they did. I think they got the Filipino dude a long time ago, but we can go with that. We can go with Journey.
2013 was a while ago. I mean, you feel more comfortable with Alice in Chains?
No. I think it's probably something else, but let's just go with Journey.
All right, we'll just give up then.
Journey. Okay, we give up.
So my friend Jeremy Hunsicker, growing up, could sing. He was a vocal mimic. He could do Guns N' Roses just like that. He could do like the Archie Bunker theme song just like that, and he could do Steve Perry just like that.
Oh wow!
And he started a Journey tribute band in Roanoke, Virginia. They found him. They flew him out west. He played with the band. He got a writing credit. They ended up not going with him, and they hired the guy from the Philippines.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it was, in fact, Journey.
Right.
Thank God.
I wonder if Ray tried out.
See, it wasn't giving.
He's like, don't stop believing.
See, it wasn't
Hold
giving
on
up.
To that feeling.
He's going with the right answer. All right, here's your third question of this round.
Yeah.
What was the name of Jacques Cousteau's research vessel, which shares a name with an island folk music?
Say that again?
What was the name of Jacques Cousteau's research vessel, which shares the name with an island folk music?
I have this in my brain somewhere.
It Reggaeton. Is...
Good.
No, I'm just kidding. Is it Calypso?
I don't think it is. I was kind of into Jacques Cousteau back in like the 70s. Say the question again.
Jacques Cousteau's research vessel shares a name with which type of island folk music?
Island folk music. Would calypso be considered folk music?
I don't know, man.
This is
a shot in the dark.
Well, I mean, it's at least sort of an island music, right?
Yeah. And you didn't specify which island.
I did not.
Kenya?
Haitian is French, right?
It is.
Mm-hmm. Don't mind that sound. This is the dog throwing up.
Yeah.
Every studio, every good podcast has a dog throwing up in the background. That's just podcasting 101.
Well, at least a dog.
Yeah.
Maybe or maybe not throwing
up. The dog's
in
here. Now he's come over for pets.
I think I'm cool with Calypso now that I think about it.
All right. I feel like, I don't know why. I feel like maybe you've asked this question live before and I answered Calypso and it was wrong.
Okay.
I've got the second guess, but maybe that's wrong. Let's go with it.
Are you going with that?
Yeah.
That's correct.
All I was going to do was pry for more clues. So, yes, we're going to go with it.
Yeah, Calypso is correct.
Yeah. All right. Cool. So, that's three for all of us, or?
I believe so. Right. You started. Yep.
Okay. So, we're going to take one last break, and then we'll be back with some final questions. All right, that was a nice little break. Oh, yep. All right, we're recording.
I really like the music that you play while we go on break.
It's very calming. Appreciate it. Yeah, that's by yours truly.
We also have a mister that blows cocaine in the room.
A mister.
Is that what's going on?
Water, cocaine laced water.
You didn't notice that, Mike? You didn't notice.
Don't you feel
the fog? The fog of war coming down. All right, we have a few questions, I should say. Three questions, one apiece from each of us.
Three song questions.
That'll be the title of this episode.
There you
three
go.
Song questions. I like it. Even though it's closer to like 21, but who's counting?
Right.
All right, let's go ahead and get into the mic. Do you want to kick us off here for this final round?
Okay. And this is something that I learned via our podcast, Three Song Stories. What world-famous country artist released a song in 1977 about a little girl and a puppy who showed up on someone's doorstep on a stormy night, only to then die by the end of the song? And the reason the puppy died, too, was that God didn't want the little girl to be alone in heaven.
Wow. Jesus Christ.
That is dark.
Country
artist?
Yeah, I'm not going to say anymore. Yeah, country artist. World famous country artist.
1977. World famous.
So, it's got to be one of the big ones.
Cash. Time period fits right.
Haggard.
Merle Haggard.
John Cash. Dolly Parton.
Mm-hmm.
Loretta Lynn. Hank Williams. I don't even know when he died.
Senior. Doesn't sound like a Hank Williams song.
You know, Dolly Parton really sticks with me.
She wrote some sad ones.
Exactly.
Whatever the opposite of a banger is. And a downer.
A whimperer.
She wrote some downers.
I mean, because if anybody was going to have to give you the news that a little girl dies from pneumonia from being on the rain or whatever, and the dog dies so she doesn't have to be alone, I'd want her to break it to me. Now listen, honey, that dog's got to go too, so you have a friend. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, that's all right.
I like where you're
kill
going with
that
this.
Dog.
Yeah, I want Dolly to deliver that news to me too, out of the people you just listed.
Should we go with it?
It's the album I would buy. The others, I'd be like, that's too sad. Johnny Cash, come on. But Dolly Parton, all right.
Willie Nelson,
just by number of songs written, that's a good guess. Because he wrote so many that he didn't even play himself.
Yeah.
But you asked who performed it?
Yes.
Dolly is what I'm thinking. I'm with you on that.
We're going to go with Dolly Parton.
You got it.
Yes! All right. Nice.
She's such a sweetheart.
You got to hear the song. It's so weird.
I bet.
So weird. She does. Just like at the end, she's like, oh, little Andy. Oh, little Sandy, little Andy.
See?
Oh. In the story, the woman told...
We're showing you a little cleavage, making it not hurt so bad.
The story that the woman told, she was a New York-based artist who was at FGCU for a show we had her on, and the story was when she was in fourth grade, her teacher, who used to dress like Dolly Parton, played it on a little record player and had a breakdown during the song and had to be taken out of class by the principal.
Holy cow.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's sad.
That is sad, but I have to compliment you. You're just reasoning a lot of these out today. That's awesome, Mark. Like, your brain is just mapped perfectly for this conversation.
And I'm on a higher level of existence right now.
Good, heightened. Good.
Okay.
Give me a question, Zaddy.
Here you go. From your trivia, Zaddy. What singer left the band Mudcrutch to go out on their own?
I've never even heard of that band.
Mudcrutch sounds straight out of 1992. Right before you go off and become like Liz Phair.
What was that one band? Rat?
Rat.
With two T's?
No. Some friends with
Ratatouille?
Rat from Parks and Rec.
Oh, yeah.
Mouse Rat. Mouse Rat. Mudcrutch.
Mudcrutch.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
A disapproving both.
It doesn't sound like a grunge band.
And that's gross.
Mudcrutch. I really don't think I've ever heard that word before.
Sounds like a grunge band, though, doesn't it? Like,
yeah.
Jawbox with openers. Mudcrutch.
Got any little teaser tips?
Mudcrutch.
I will tell you that. Let me think. It was pre 1976.
Oh, and so it was the lead singer of Mudcrutch that went out on his own.
Yes,
I'm thinking. Played the Star Spangled Band Woodstock. Hendrix. Jimi Hendrix. Stevie.
Mudcrutch.
Yeah, I'm thinking Jimi Hendrix.
That doesn't sound like a bad idea, actually.
I don't know why, but that's what I'm thinking.
I'm heightened too, Mark.
So, you know.
Our friend Zach had a huge Jimi Hendrix box set. And now that you're saying Jimi Hendrix, I'm wondering, do I remember hearing about Mudcrutch, looking through the liner notes of that box set? Maybe I do.
Maybe I do.
I'm convinced by my perhaps false memory.
Yeah.
I'm agreeing with you here. Let's go with Jimi Hendrix.
Okay.
The correct answer is Thomas Edward Petty.
Gainesville, Tom Petty.
Yeah. Oh, that, yeah.
Damn it.
Yep.
He
spent some time in Gainesville, Torpedoes. Right?
He's from Gainesville. Legit grew up there.
Yep.
But did you
I lived in Gainesville for a year and spent a lot of time there over the years.
Gotcha. Did you go to school up there or just hanging out? Or
I graduated from Edison Community College while attending Santa Fe Community College as a transient student because my girlfriend at the time was going to UF.
Okay.
Gotcha.
So, there you go.
Lots of universities involved in your education.
But as a matter of fact, I worked...
Formal and informally.
At Gainesville. In Fort Myers, I had worked at Ives Bookshop, if you guys were around long enough to remember that back in the day.
Was that in the mall?
In the mall, yeah. I worked there until it closed down. And then when I went up to Gainesville, I was the book manager at a media play, which had a bookstore, a music store, and a video store. It was like an early model of that back in the early 90s. And the music manager gave me a stack of advanced promo CDs that people were trying to get his attention. And I went home and I listened to them all. And like the second to the last one was Bargainville by Moxie Fruvis.
There you go. Holy cow.
Thanks for the Gainesville tee up.
Yeah.
There you
right
go.
On, right on.
It all comes back.
Cool. All right. My final question Canada. For you guys. Do either of you guys watch... HBO's Vinyl?
No. I was told to.
I want to, but I have not yet. That's a very discouraged look on your face.
Well, maybe, I don't know. Maybe you'll get this. Who plays promotions manager Zach Yankovic? Yankovic? I don't know. I haven't seen either. But who plays Zach Yankovic in HBO's Vinyl? He's a music promotions manager.
That's who the actual person is?
Is it the guy from...
This is a historical...
The Women of Wrestling show, too?
Mark Maron?
Is it Mark Maron?
Mark Maron is the dude in
That's who popped into my head.
Maybe Weird Al Yankovic. Wouldn't that be funny?
I feel like I would have known that.
Come on, Mark, you would have known that too. If he was on that show. You would let that slip by you?
He's done a lot of stuff. Can you tell us anything about the person who does the acting?
On the show?
Yeah.
They performed their first ever nude scene.
Well, shit.
Yeah.
Is it a male?
Yes, it is.
Naked Man.
Person is better known as a comedian than a dramatic actor.
We should go with Marc Maron. That's who you had in your mind.
I'm down.
Well, we gotta go with Marc Maron.
No, Mark, it's actually me, Ray Romano. It's Ray Romano. How could you forget that I was me on HBO's Vinyl, Mark?
But what about about Matthew and Gregory and Alexandra Jonathan?
They're not allowed on set because my dong's out.
Well played.
Get those balls swinging, son of a bitch.
Well, that's our episode. Sadly, our time has come to an end here. Mike, thanks for being on the show.
Hey, thanks for doing it.
Yeah, can't wait to hear Mark's episode of Three Song Stories.
Thank you again for having me on there, and thank you for coming here.
Thank you so much for doing it. And now you're in the hot seat. We're going to get you on the calendar, too.
I can't wait. Lee, so yeah, I can't wait. Absolutely. I'll start plotting your songs. Thanks. Yeah. Looking forward to it. All right. So where can people go and find, listen to the podcast as well as follow along on social media?
ThreeSongStories.org will redirect to our hosting site, which is through Podbean, but it's also fed into the Master Hive Mind. So if you just search it with it, pretty much any podcast app, it'll pop up. It's got the bright yellow logo with the little tape riff thing. And then we're at Three Song Stories on Facebook, and we don't have an Instagram yet. We don't know if we have the cycles for paying attention to an extra stream, but yeah. ThreeSongStories.org or wherever you get your podcasts, if they say.
It is very interesting, and if I may say so, don't just try and look for names that you'll recognize, because it's, you know, when you're telling stories that are that personal to you, it doesn't matter who the person is. It's captivating. The questions are really, really good. Their song selections are always interesting. You're bound to hear something that you'd never heard before, so you should just kind of jump right in. It's really, really good.
And I will say, I'm not going to try to direct anybody, but when we did the pilot episode with Richard, we sent it around the station and got feedback, and we thought, if we can only ever do that good again, we'll be doing great. So the pilot episode itself knocks it out of the park, and we did everything very intentionally. We took a lot of walks around campus after Gulf Coast Live, coming up with how we wanted to present the show. And if you listen to episode 1 or episode 60, we're right there in the same vein, you know what I mean? But the show itself also starts becoming very self-referential, because stories start escaping this podcast into the world and they start coming back to us. So if you listen to them in order, there is like a narrative going on.
Gotcha. So go in order. Listen to Three Song Stories in order through, I'm sorry, what is ThreeSongStories.org?
ThreeSongStories.org
.org.
Or pod, you know, wherever, just search it on your podcast app.
Yeah, three written out. THREE.
Three written out. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. Join us every Monday morning for a new episode by subscribing to No Nonsense Trivia Podcast on your favorite podcast platform. You can support the No-No by sharing our podcast with a friend on your social media accounts. You can also leave, or on your social media accounts, you can also leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform, like Dusty Milo did, who left us a very nice 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Dusty is a truck driver who writes, "I've already heard every song on the radio, so I decided to mix it up and try a podcast for once. I found these guys, and holy shit, I listened for 10 hours straight because they are fucking awesome." That's exactly what Aaron said. Aaron said we were fucking awesome. I feel good about that.
Yeah, I'll take that for sure.
Dusty also adds that his home base is actually in Punta Gorda, and he's going to come down to some No-No live events next time he's in town. He said he was on his way from, I think, New Mexico to California when he discovered us, but it sounded like we were his first podcast.
Which ever. Is amazing.
Yeah.
Hopefully we didn't ruin it for him.
No, he left 5 stars, so thanks, Dusty Milo. If you've already left a review and want to take our relationship to the next level and just want to straight up give us some money, you can support the podcast on Patreon by visiting our website, thenono.com, and clicking on the support link at the top, which will take you to our Patreon page. Thank you to our Patreon supporters for helping us out with the show. Thanks to our quiz daddies, Tommy from the Electric Mud and Tim from San Diego, a member of the trivia team going by Pat's Garden Service. Thanks to our team captains, Kristen and Fletcher. Thank you also to our proverbial light keepers, Sarah, Brina, Carly, Christopher, Josh, Max, Lucas, Sean, Sherry, and Gil. Thank you for keeping the proverbial lights on, as well as a thanks to our Rumpelstiltskins, Michael C. and Michael J. Thanks, guys.
We love you all.
If you'd like to support the podcast, go to thenono.com and click support at the top. You can also write us a Rate My Question or a Miscorrection at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com. Please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at No Nonsense Trivia, and on Twitter at No Non Trivia. We also have a Facebook group where you can join as well to chat with other listeners or us directly. Just search for the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast on Facebook for that. And finally, once again, don't forget to leave us a rating. Just go to whatever service you're on right now and rate us. 5 stars only, please.
Please.
Yeah, we left all of our mint-eating mouth noises out of the episode.
I had to mention mouth noises.
Yeah, go for it.
No, Rachel Iacovone, who works at the station, she's all things considered host. She has a friend who said he listened to our podcast and he really likes it, but he was being annoyed by some mouth noises.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if this is the same dude.
Yeah, probably. Look, you're this close to the microphone. You're going to get some crinklies.
I got a mint right here, but yep. I'm going to hold off. I'm going to hold off the next couple of minutes.
And that's why you're going to give us some 5-star reviews. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week.